Thank you for joining us for this series of interviews with the candidates for the upcoming primary election. This time we have Janet McNulty. She's running for the U.S. Senate here in West Virginia. So could you introduce yourself, please?
Well, as you said, my name is Janet McNulty, and I'm running for the United States Senate here in West Virginia. Not much to tell. I work in retail currently. I'm a writer and I publish my own books and occasionally offer IT consulting for people in the local area.
Okay, great. By the way, what kind of books do you write?
I write a variety of genres. I have like paranormal, humorous mysteries, a science fiction series, and then two dystopian series and a few kids' books.
Okay, so they're like sold on Amazon, things like that?
Yes, they're available in all online retailers like Amazon, Books A Million, Kobo.
Okay. They're under your name or a pseudonym?
My name.
Okay. All right. All right. Maybe some of our listeners are enthusiasts. So what do you think is the biggest issue facing the United States right now?
You want me to narrow it down to one?
Okay. Three. Well, a couple issues in general. You know.
I know a lot of people are going to say, obviously, the border is an issue. I think for some, term limits is an issue. Having the same politicians over and over, it's an issue. But I think one of the most untalked about issues in this country is the fact that as a population, we have become increasingly apathetic or complacent in our lives. And when it comes to paying attention to current events, especially political events, and I think a growing issue would be our movement towards tribalism now, because we're dividing ourselves into groups and subgroups and into these echo chambers where anyone who says something we don't like or that we completely agree with, we just won't listen to them. And so we stick in these echo chambers where we only listen to people who say things we like. Those two issues, I think, are untalked about issues, because if we don't listen to one another or if we don't pay attention to what's going on, that is what has led to, say, the border being wide open or the fact that our government keeps sending money to foreign countries without taking care of Americans first. Any variety of issues we're facing now, you can always go back to or be traced back to the fact that we as a population are not paying attention to what our own politicians are doing.
Okay, interesting point, tribalism. I mean, I've thought about in the terms of maybe, well, you tell me, like, if it's a similar thing or same, like, I would say maybe like civic breakdown or like, you know, yeah, not caring enough or like not caring about your neighbors enough, not caring what's going on, not like, you know, being more what I would say civic minded, you know, like, whatever's going on in your neighborhood or community, it concerns you. You should need to know and care about it or something like that. Is that what you're saying?
Something like that. You know, we used to have tight-knit communities. We used to talk to our neighbors, so to speak, and actually hang out with one another, pay attention to what was going on, say, down Joe's house down the street. We don't anymore. We're caught up in our own little world. Obviously, we're each trying to make our lives work. We're all working, busy. Many of us have kids. Some are working multiple jobs. But you still have to care about your community. You know, if you don't care about your community, anything can happen. And then you're going to be sitting there wondering, well, how did this happen? Well, it's because we weren't paying attention. We didn't care about each other.
Okay, fair enough. So recently it's been busy in the Congress. Well, it's always busy. But anyway, three things jumped out recently. For instance, the recently passed, I guess last weekend, $60 billion for Ukraine, as well as funding for Israel and Taiwan. Would you have voted for that bill?
No, I wouldn't. One of my campaign pieces is severely restricting, if not eliminating, all foreign aid. We barely have the money to cover our own budget here domestically in this country. And you have to ask yourselves, where are they getting this money, the $60 billion now that they're going to send to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan? And we've already sent, what, $100 billion to the Ukraine? We keep sending money overseas, but where are we getting it? How are we paying for this? That's never covered.
I heard that it was a quote-unquote loan. Although, aren't we already spending like 30% or something on the debt payments or something? what do you say? Interest payments.
I honestly, at this point, I can't keep up with what Congress is paying on the interest towards the debt. They say we are now $34.4 trillion in debt, and there's estimates that we're getting about $100 trillion in interest added to the debt every 100 days. So again, if we're that far in debt, where are they getting the $60 billion?
Right. That makes sense what you're saying. On another issue of the last couple weeks, do you support the passage of the FISA extension that just occurred, allowing, the warrantless searches? Do you support that, or are you opposed to that?
I am opposed to that because of the violations of the Fourth Amendment. A warrantless search, if they can search your phone history, your credit card history, or anything about you without a warrant, are you safe? Is your privacy safe? What's to stop the federal agencies from doing a phishing expedition because they feel like they have to look like they're doing something to fight whatever the current threat of the day is? We can't have that. There's a reason why the Fourth Amendment exists. And it has to be protected. And my concern is FISA is a complete violation of that.
And then on a related issue of funding, what about the $1.2 trillion spending bill, I guess continuing resolution for the rest of this fiscal year? Would you have voted for that?
As a big omnibus bill,
Yeah, the
no,
March one that passed in
I
March.
would rather have everything broken down, into separate spending bills. We need a budget, honestly. I don't think we've had a budget since the 1990s when Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House, and that's downright pathetic. These ominous spending bills seems to be, they just seem to grow year after year after year. And again, where are we getting the money? Where is the money going? Are we even getting a breakdown of where the money's going? What's being added to it at the last minute? So having not read it fully, my inclination was to not vote for it because what we need is a real budget and a budget that we stick to.
So, how would you propose to reel in spending? Do you have any specific ideas?
The first thing to do would be to actually do an itemized list of everything our government spends money on. It's like a household budget in a way, except on a much more massive scale. But if, say, on a In your own home, you realize you don't have much money. You go through list by list, item by item, what it is you're spending money on. And then you look through it where you can make cuts or what you can eliminate. What is it you actually need? That's what we need to do on the government, to be honest. We need an itemized list of everything our government spends money on. It'll be tedious. It will not be fun. But it has to be done because you can't start looking at where to do cuts or looking at what we need and don't need or where we can divert money if you don't know what you're spending money on. But first and foremost, no more pet projects of politicians. I am tired of them slipping these things in to pay for their own personal
Oh,
pet.
so you would, how do you say, support a reenaction of the add-ons? Okay, so you're against that. While we're talking about budgets, what about, fixing or helping Social Security from running out? Suppose, understandably, it's going to run out apparently of funds after, I don't know, maybe not even a decade, less than that. Anyway, do you have any ideas about it?
Well, I know I've been hearing about how Social Security is going to run out of funds since I was a teenager. So luckily it hasn't yet. But first and foremost, we have to look at what Social Security entails. I think we need to put it back to what it was when it was first enacted in the 1930s under FDR as basically a retirement for senior citizens. And since then, we have added on to who can claim Social Security. And we need to put it back to what it was originally meant for. It also needs to be returned to being a trust fund like it used to be, where any money that you pay into that's deducted from your paycheck every pay period is literally held in trust for you. That's not the case anymore, but we need to put it back to that. It's not going to be, I wouldn't claim that it'll fix it 100%, but I think it can get us on the road to trying to make sure that Social Security has money for those of us who aren't collecting it, but will be in about 20, 30, or even 40 years.
Yeah. So when you said extra things added on, is that the so-called, I think it's the acronym or letters are SSI. It's like supplemental income. Is that part of Social Security. What are those add-ons you're talking about, just for clarity?
Unfortunately, I don't have all the details, but I do know that sometimes someone who's my age or younger can collect Social Security for whatever reason if they have, and I can't remember the exact details, but if you can provide a good enough reason to needing that extra income, you can. We could definitely make sure that
Sounds like
only
just a
citizens who have
disability.
paid
Oh, go
into the
ahead.
system are getting Social Security payments. If you haven't paid into the system, obviously you shouldn't be receiving anything.
Okay, I think that's part of it now, but if there were cuts in other areas, like seniors like me would it'd be reasonable to also cut the Social Security. But anyway, to some extent. Yeah, it definitely needs attention. Just pretending nothing's happening isn't going to work. No, but the current it's usually a talking point of politicians. We will not cut Social Security. Okay, that's good. You know,
Well,
I'm a senior, you know, but
every year since I've been voting, Social Security has been a talking point, but I've never seen anyone take any real action to try and solve the Social Security problem, and it just seems to
exactly.
get worse and worse. What really has me, I mean, you have to really look at it, look at what it is, what's going on, all the legislation that has been passed since, it was first enacted regarding Social Security. And of course, I haven't done that, but that does need to be done. But those two things I mentioned, at least trying to return it to what it was initially meant to be, I think can put us on the road to helping ensure there's some money in Social Security.
Okay.
But we also have to bear in mind that unfortunately, there's been a childbirth drop. And, if you don't have enough younger people paying into the system, how do we cover the payments for the senior citizens? And that has to be addressed.
Well, a good point. Now that you mentioned that, I want to ask you about something else that's near and dear to my heart, because we have a nonprofit urban life training that deals with like strengthening families. What do you think, if anything, Congress should do to strengthen two-parent husband-wife families? Do you, and part of that question is, do you agree that the decline of two-parent husband-wife families is at the core of all societal problems?
I would say the decline of what we call the nuclear family is the core of a lot of our societal problems. They say it takes both a mom and a dad. You need a stable household and a stable home to raise children in so they can learn how to be productive members of society, learn right from wrong, have a good work ethic. Obviously, and studies have shown that kids that come from two-parent households typically have better futures than those that come from single parent households. Not saying that a child that comes from a single parent household can't become, a neurosurgeon. Obviously this is America, anything's possible, but typically two parent households do give kids a good advantage. It really does.
Do you think, considering that, one issue that's often talked about on a state level or nationally is like abortion, but in our organization, we, have a mission to encourage teens to like save sex for marriage and be successful in their family life. And we do that kind of like, we have a lot of educational materials. All that being said, do you think it would be wise to take it back a step further? In other words, instead of so much focus on abortion, why not focus on helping youth to make wise decisions, like you're saying, that are statistically proven, like, hey, if you don't have kids till you're married, that's better. It's better financially, it's better for the kids, et cetera, et cetera. And then if you emphasize abstaining for marriage, I think about 80% of the need for abortion would be cut. Or does that make sense? Or do you have any comment on that?
No, actually, that makes total sense. If you think about it, the rise in teenagers participating in sexual intercourse has led to a rise in teenage pregnancies, which leads to a rise in abortions. Because obviously, as a teenager, you're not ready for a baby. You're not even thinking about it. And so there's Planned Parenthood saying, hey, here's a get out of jail free card. And if you're 15, 16, or 17, you're already in an emotional state and you're going to be susceptible to that. Just trying to help youth make good decisions is a good idea. And this is where local communities can play a huge role if we all band together and help our youth, help them learn valuable skills, help them learn how to manage their finances, and yes, help them realize the importance of waiting until you're preferably married, but at least in a very stable, committed relationship before you start participating in, say, sexual intercourse that leads to kids. But we also need to, if you do know teenage teen pregnancies, we need to help them be able to make the right decision. Like, if they choose to keep the child, help them get the things they need, diapers, baby formula, the blankets, the clothing, everything. This is where banding together and helping one another could really help decrease the number of abortions.
Isn't that sort of the idea of the so-called crisis pregnancy center? Are you talking about something more or that kind of thing or what?
I know there are government programs that can help and that is worth looking into. There are Catholic charities and other Christian charities that help. But I'm also just talking about us as individuals taking an interest in our own community doing it.
Right.
You can't always rely on an organization or a group to help you. We as individuals need to be proactive, very proactive. So, if you know someone, say your local school has a high teen pregnancy rate, and say we know this, what can we as the adults in this community do to help those teenage mothers? We need to be proactive as individuals.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. I think that's good. Although, yeah, the education part is, well, more like our cup of tea. But I hear what you're saying. It's
Well, education's
multifaceted.
important too.
Yeah.
Education's very important.
As in, also, like, for, well, actually, with several thousand youth overall in a maybe 300 in club settings where, like, clubs were. Youth are interested in staying absent, like attend, and they'd be peer counselors and do activities and fun activities and stuff. All that being said, not all youth are hearing about it, especially if they don't come from a, two-parent family, and they just might not be on their radar that, hey, I really should wait to have sex. So it's kind of like when you hear that, for a lot of people, it makes sense. Hey, that's a good idea. At least that's my experience.
Well, it is true that a lot are not aware of it. You have to look at our culture too. We have Hollywood, we have entertainment that promotes just teen sex, and a lot of them are inundated with that. But you do what you can. You get the message out to whom you can, you help those that you can, and I guess you take the wins when you get them.
True, true. So these are two kind of interrelated things. Like if you were in a Congress, say in 2020, and there was a lot of talk, and of course it's now being talked about a lot continually, and I think it should be, about election fraud. Would you have voted to like investigate what was going on with the 2020 election? I mean, ostensibly that's what they were doing on January 6th when the protests took place, or whatever, rally at the Capitol. And the related question is, what do you think about the way that's been handled in that, some people are still in jail after 3 or 4 years and they're still trying to round up more people? Do you have some opinions on those related topics?
Well, Congress should have done their job in 2020 and investigated the allegations of election fraud, because they didn't, and because the Supreme Court wouldn't later take up Texas's case against Pennsylvania, at least half the country thinks that there was fraud. And that trust in our election system has diminished, and you can't have that in a democratic system. If there is election fraud or allegations, it needs to be investigated, because we have to make sure and ensure that our elections are free and fair. As for January 6th, the ones that are still in prison, it's ridiculous that they're still in prison. They have a right to a speedy trial. They have a right to, a trial by a jury of their peers, and they're still in jail. They haven't gone to court yet. As far as I know, they haven't even been charged, or some have been charged, some are still waiting charges, and that is a complete violation of their own rights, their constitutional rights. It's what's going on here. You had BLM protesters who got arrested, and they were actually let go within a few days on bail.
Right.
So why the discrepancy? Why the double standard?
Okay. Yeah. I've noticed that, except for a few exceptions, like maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar, if I pronounce his name correctly, and a couple other people, not a lot of congressmen have been willing to come out on the J6 issue. It's kind of sadly.
Sadly, it is a hot topic issue. You have to realize the media has spun it to calling it an insurrection, and anyone that says, hey, these guys deserve a right to the trial, like their rights are being violated. If they've been charged, charge them and then try them. Don't just leave them rotting in jail. But if you do that, all of a sudden you're called an insurrectionist. It's become a very hot topic issue, and for no reason, really. If they, trespassed or committed vandalism, obviously that's wrong. We have security camera footage that would show those who have been arrested if they participated in that or not. And so, like I say, charge them, try them, and then let them pay their debt to society and go home. But we haven't done that.
Right. Okay. One other issue I wanted to ask you about is, well, it's usually referred to as like vaccination choice or like freedom to choose for your children. This has actually fallen onto more a state issue. It's a big issue here in West Virginia with our, no vaccination, no school attendance policy. But what I'm getting at is, so do you believe in vaccination choice, that you can choose what substances your children are injected with? And would you attempt to do anything to fix like the 1986, the bill that took away the liability for the pharma companies?
I think that 1986 bill needs to be repealed. Like any company, if you roll out a faulty product, and let's face it, vaccines are a product, and let's say someone got in, they suffered a reaction. It can happen. Sometimes you might be allergic to an ingredient in there and you didn't know about it. You have the right to sue the manufacturer. Any other product that's out for sale, that's on the shelves of the stores that you can purchase, if it harms you in any way, you can sue the manufacturer. So why are pharmaceutical companies are exempt from this when it comes to vaccines? That's just not, to me, that's not right. I do believe in vaccine choice. I think your body, your choice, basically, you have the right to decide what goes in your body. If you are a parent, you have the right to decide what goes into your child's body until the child turns 18 and is legally an adult. You shouldn't be barred from going to school just because you don't want to give your child a vaccine for whatever reason, especially since your tax dollars are paying for these schools. If you are going to be barred from attending public school, then you shouldn't be funding them. The only federal issue in this would be the 1986 legislation, which
Right.
I think needs to be repealed. Everything else is a state issue, not a federal. But as for me, I do believe in being able to choose what goes into your body. So if you want vaccines, by all means, get them, and they should be made freely available. But for those who maybe don't want vaccines, they shouldn't be forced to. Or if you say you want this set of vaccines, but you don't want that set of vaccines, you should be able to pick and choose which ones are for you and obviously for your children if they're not legally adults.
Okay. Do you have an opinion about the what is often referred to as the weaponization of like the Department of Justice, notably the Trump cases, but not just that, people they had their homes raided for, who were abortion clinic protesters and things like that. Well, specifically that, and some really outrageous cases. So what can be done about this kind of weaponization and of the justice system?
Well, I think we have a justice system that's been given a little too free rein to do whatever they want. Personally, it seems to me that they're violating our rights. As for what can be done, Congress is going to have to rein them in, and that's basically going to be done by controlling their funding. And so, like the FBI, if they just pop into someone's house because they think that guy's a terrorist, but they have no proof, they've got no warrant, they just do it, they shoot the dog, shoot the people, and then arrest everyone. That's not acceptable in a free society. That looks a lot more like Nazi Germany, to be honest. If that happens, the FBI, and this is a hypothetical situation, by the way, should be called to task. That means the people involved should be brought up on charges of violating these guys' rights, charges of murder if they did that. But as for controlling the weaponization of the DOJ, that's going to be done through the funding, through controlling their funding, either restricting it or limiting it until they start abiding by our constitutional rights, especially the Fourth Amendment. It's right there in the Bill of Rights. We all swear an oath to uphold it.
I agree. I mean, we could do a defund the whole thing. I mean, what's it doing? And also, don't we have about 17 or however many law enforcement agencies we have, and not even including the state agencies, we have all kinds of agencies,
You have local law enforcement, you got state law enforcement. Do we really need federal law enforcement? There are probably cases where, say, the FBI or the U.S. Marshals Service are useful when you're dealing with interstate with criminals going across state lines, but they should still be restricted. Their ability to do whatever they want needs to be severely restricted. Law enforcement should still stay in the hands of local communities. That means your local police, your local sheriff's department, and then if it's a state issue, obviously the state troopers. But we need to try and keep it local.
What about the current border crisis? What are your thoughts on that and what needs to be done?
Personally, we need to just shut down the border. We've already had hundreds of thousands. There's some estimates that at least 3 to 5 million illegal immigrants have come across the border since Biden was inaugurated as president and rescinded by executive order many of Trump's policies regarding the border and border security. And if he's not going to rescind those executive orders, which it doesn't look like he will, then Congress is going to have to basically put pressure on Biden to do that. And that's going to be by not doing what he wants, like not passing all these funding bills he wants. But ideally, the border should be closed. And I hopefully, whoever the next president is, will shut down the border entirely. That means no more immigrants coming through, especially illegal immigrants. Put a stop on all the visas temporarily and put a stop on any entry into the country temporarily until we can figure out who is here and if they're actually refugees seeking asylum or if they're just criminals.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was talking to another candidate, Joe, earlier, and he was saying something similar. Just let people who are in the system process legally, but everything else shut it down.
Yeah, legal can be fine. They at least we have ports of entry for a reason. We have a process for a reason. It may not be the best in the world, but we have it. Legal immigration should always be promoted, but those who are here illegally, we need to start figuring out who's here and who's not. And Texas has a plan of using traffic stops to try and find illegal immigrants because most of your illegals will not have a driver's license. They're not going to have driver insurance, in which case, if during a traffic stop, which they can only do if you commit a traffic violation, and they discover that the driver and the people within the vehicle are illegal, they can then arrest them, detain them, and send them to the immigration services.
Okay. But right now that won't work, will it? Because they're not deporting
That's
anybody.
Texas. Texas is doing that. Other
Oh,
states will
they
have to
are.
enact a policy, but it's just an idea.
But does the ICE people actually deport the people? I mean, do they? In
They
Texas.
would. They would if they're allowed to, but the Biden regime is not allowing deportations. Again, it's going to depend on who we can get in as president, and if the who's ever elected in 2024 will allow deportations to take place.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Okay, well, as we're coming, I think more toward the conclusion, yeah, just please take an opportunity to like talk about anything that's close to your heart or your campaign policy or platform that we didn't touch on, and then how you're differentiating yourself from other candidates if for the Senate, if you like. Go ahead.
Well, you can learn more about my platform at www.mcnultywv.com. Look, I honestly initially did not want to run for office. I like my privacy and I tend to be an introverted person, but I love my country. I have not liked what I've seen for the last 10 years or more as far as where we're going with spending, where we're going with illegal immigration, or just the fact that we as a society seem to be tearing each other apart because we just can't seem to agree on anything. And that's why I'm running. I don't want to see this country, this republic, be torn apart and just go down the route that every Republican history has ever gone, which is pretty much into civil war until it becomes an authoritarian regime. And so if there's anything I can do to help prevent that or stop it, that's what I'm going to do. And this is the only thing I can think of. I give my word. I will fight for term limits. I will do what I can to protect and preserve the Constitution of the United States. And that's not what you're getting from a lot of others. Most are in it for themselves. I'm not.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on today. We will make this
Thank you for having
available.
me.
Yeah, it'll be on any podcast platform at the Richard Urban Show or on the video format on visionroot.org. And yeah, really appreciate.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.